From the Carnegie Tsinghua Center in Beijing, China, this is the China in the World podcast hosted by Paul Hanley.
Welcome back to the China in the World podcast. Today I'm honored to have our first former cabinet secretary ever to join the China in the World podcast, former Secretary of Commerce, Penny Pritzker. Secretary Pritzker is in Beijing, having just joined the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace Board of Trustees in February of this year. She was the former Secretary of Commerce in the Obama administration from 2013 to 2017, where she was a key member of President Obama's economic team and the country's chief commercial advocate. Prior to that, she served 27 years, primarily as a business builder. Started out in law school, going on to business school. She has started 5 companies. She's led dozens of businesses across a range of sectors. Without a doubt, one of the United States' most successful entrepreneurs, impactful policymakers, and general philanthropists. It's a great pleasure to have on the podcast today. Thanks for joining.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks, Paul.
I just wanted to start out, Secretary of Commerce, it's a big job. And I'm not sure how much our sort of audience understands what it is the Secretary of Commerce does and what the Commerce Department is responsible for. It'd be good to hear what you saw as your role as Secretary of Commerce for President Obama.
Well, that's a good question, because there's a lot of people who don't understand this Commerce Department, so I'm happy to give you my take on it. First of all, it was an honor of a lifetime to be able to serve our country and serve as Secretary of Commerce. As you said, I came out of a business background. I'd spent 27 years in the private sector building businesses, so I tried to bring that experience into my government role. The president asked me to do 3 things, so it's important to ground what's the work we did with what did the president ask me to do. He asked me as secretary to really build a bridge to the business community. Second was to be the voice of business in the policymaking process, both domestically and around the world. And third is to be the chief commercial advocate for U.S. businesses, both domestically and around the world. Frankly, the bar was low. The relationship with the business community at the time I came in was not where it needed to be, and the president wasn't happy with it. And so he was focused on that and the policy and our position in the world. But there was also, as you said, a department to run. And what does that department do?
Yeah.
I thought about the department as a service organization. We did everything from count the fish in the sea and tell you how many fish you could catch to providing weather, to executing the census, which is required by our Constitution, to helping American companies do international trade all over the world, to working with the White House and the Congress to develop an internet policy for the United States, to give American companies a patent or a trademark, which they needed to protect their intellectual property. We were also in charge of economic development for the country. Wow. So we worked with the states and local governments to help them attract investment. We were responsible for standards, setting the standards with the private sector for different aspects of our economy, everything from fire hydrants to nanotechnology, and working with the manufacturing community to set policy and really help our manufacturing community get back on its feet. That's not the whole list, but as you can see,
it's diverse.
It's very diverse. But the way we thought about it and the way we went about it is when I arrived, I worked with the leadership in the Department of Commerce, both the career leadership and our politically appointed leadership, to develop a strategic plan, which we called our Open for Business agenda. And we took our first 100 days. We went out and listened to our number one stakeholder, which was the business community.
Sure.
We tried to get people in place because we had a lot of vacancies. but we worked as a leadership team to put together a strategy. Mm-hmm. And by leadership team, I mean 60 or 70 of us worked together on this plan. Mm-hmm. So we brought the breadth and depth of the department together. And it was really, and then we went to the White House and to Congress and sold our strategy mm-hmm. to them. Mm. You know, first getting permission from the president, is this what you want? And we're really five pillars to our strategy. Mm. First was innovation. We were going to work on manufacturing. We were going to work on our digital policy. We were going to work on making sure we had a skilled workforce. Second was data. Mm. We produce a ton of data. 40 terabytes of data a day at the Department of Commerce. How do we unleash the power of that data, mm. particularly in a time of artificial intelligence? Third was exports and foreign direct investment. How do we improve both for the American businesses, for foreign businesses, but predominantly for American people, mm-hmm. because both result in jobs in America, good jobs in America. Mm. How do we provide good environmental intelligence, which is NOAA is part of the Department of Commerce. So understanding not just the weather, but flooding and droughts and all the different ways that the environment can affect commerce. And finally, we committed to do it with operational excellence. How do we improve the way we operate? Mm. And it took a lot of collaboration. We created a culture of collaboration during my tenure. Mm. But it was one that I think was productive for the American people, for American businesses, and for the administration and Congress.
I never realized how diverse the agenda was of the Commerce Department. That's a wide-ranging agenda. And it's not, I don't think, well-known. At least it was not to me. You talked a little bit about policy, your role mm-hmm. in helping President Obama develop policy, economic policy, as a key economic advisor to President Obama. Can you talk a little bit about the role the Commerce Secretary plays in the interagency in the crafting economic policy and how the Commerce Department would interact with other agencies in terms of formulating a U.S. foreign policy, the economic piece of that more broadly?
So President Obama and his key advisors understood that the economic power of the United States was an arrow in our quiver. We have our military power, we have our strategic power, we have our diplomatic power, but we also have our economic and commercial presence around the world. And so in the way that it would work technically is the National Economic Council, which I was a member of, and the National Strategic Council. I was invited to join mm-hmm. both. On the economic side, I was present all the time because all the economic issues would be discussed, and present would be the Treasury Secretary, the U.S. Trade Rep, mm-hmm. sometimes the Labor Secretary, depending upon the issue, sometimes the State Department, depending upon the issue. So the mm-hmm. various parts of the federal...
And they have an economic bureau at the State Department as well.
Yes. But their job is a little different. It's mm-hmm. more reporting on the economics within countries as opposed to how do we engage in commerce with those countries. So it's a little bit different point of view. And so we were invited into these councils to bring the point of view of the business community. And you would be surprised, frankly, on the national security side, particularly today, because so much of innovation occurs in our private sector, mm-hmm. where the national security issues would implicate our commercial positions, so sanctions mm-hmm. or taking various positions as it relates to technology, as it relates to our national security. So the Secretary of Commerce would be present mm-hmm. in those conversations with the goal of not only bringing our judgment to the table, but also to represent how will this implicate the U.S. business community.
Mm-hmm. And what were the biggest, you know, you came from, to do this job, you came from 27 years of running businesses into the government bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. How was that adjustment, and what were some of the difficulties? What are some of the things that actually, frankly, were easy going from private into the public sector?
Well, first of all, the toughest thing were the acronyms. Everybody spoke in, you know, a few letters, and I had no idea what people were talking about. So I really, but fortunately, I wasn't shy about saying, I have no idea what that means. Can you explain it to me? But seriously, you know, on day one, we tried, and I tried very hard to listen. Listen to our stakeholders and understand what was important to them. What were their priorities? Because it's not the job for the secretary to decide the priorities. It's the job of the secretary to help the administration understand what the American business community and what our economy would need in order to help, you know, for the benefit, not just of our businesses, but for our American workforce and for Americans.
Having that 27 years of experience
was invaluable because it gave me insight into what it's really like out there.
And how you could help.
And how we could be helpful. But frankly, we went out, I went on a listening tour. You know, we went to 8 different parts of the country in the first 100 days and listened. We did roundtables. I met with, just in the first 100 days, met with over 400 CEOs to hear of different size companies, everything from bicycle manufacturers to the head of GE, to understand, to the technology companies, what are their issues. And that helped us then create our priorities and develop a strategic plan. And it helped give confidence to the breadth of talent at the Department of Commerce to say, this is what our constituency wants us to be working on. And, you know, working on a skilled workforce, that was an issue I heard from businesses of all sizes. Working on trade agreements, businesses of all sizes said, we need trade agreements. We're struggling with our supply chain, or we're struggling to get market access. So it was, and they wanted tax reform. You know, which we were unable to get done, but they recognized that was not, we had a non-competitive tax structure. So, you know, they helped to identify what are the priorities for us. And, you know, I was really gratified. Just last week, one of the senior career professionals said to me, told one of my colleagues, actually, that they said our strategic plan was the most effective work that she had done in her 40 years of government. And she felt that her work was more impactful because she knew it was, we were all moving in the same direction. It wasn't just, you know, she was off on a tangent. So it was really great.
And so coming out of the Obama administration, looking back now on your experience as Commerce Secretary, what are the things you are, that you feel most proud about as Commerce Secretary in terms of the accomplishments, and where do you think the U.S. now going forward still needs to focus on? What can Commerce Department help with?
So, you know, I'm really proud of a lot of the work that we did, but I'll name a few of the things. First of all, Select USA, which was we created a real program to spur inbound investment into the United States. Why did we do that? Because it's good for the American people. It's good for American workers. Those companies provide jobs that pay more. And so I was really proud of that program, and we had a huge impact. I think just in the couple of years we did the program, I think we impacted about $23 billion worth of investment. Second, we created the first ever digital agenda. You know, we focused on a free and open internet, privacy, cybersecurity, access to high-speed broadband for all Americans, new technologies, really understanding the impact of new technologies, and then creating policy that would help the department and our administration support our views on each of those issues. We completed the EU-US Privacy Shield, which was a renegotiation of the safe harbor that we had that allowed $290 billion of transatlantic digital commerce to go forward after the Snowden revelations. We focused for the first time on a skilled workforce. You know, typically that's been the purview of solely of the Labor Department. But the reality in the 21st century and given technology change, you really need the Commerce and the Labor Department to work together on that because what the businesses need needs to be fed into the processes created by the Labor Department. We unlocked our data. We created new ways for our data to be made available. We created something called the Commerce Data Service, where we not only brought in outside expertise from the technology world to help us make our data more available, but we also taught our own folks how to make our data more available. Mm-hmm. So we not only, you know, we didn't just provide fish, we taught our folks how to fish.
Yeah.
And then our manufacturing Manufacturing USA, we manage the network of the 14 new advanced manufacturing institutes that were created under the Obama administration. And we created the first one ever by the Department of Commerce. So I was really proud of that. Finally, our international engagement. Mm. I visited 37 countries. I worked on commercial diplomacy, whether it was with Ukraine or Tunisia. With Mexico, we tried to build bridges, not walls. With India, we really raised the importance of our commercial relationship to be equivalent of our strategic relationship. We built the India Business Council, focused on entrepreneurship. We opened up Cuba. We played a huge role in opening up Cuba and normalizing our relations there. Export, trade expansion, enforcement in terms of steel dumping into the United States, aluminum dumping and others. So I'm really proud of the work we did. Regrets are things that require further work. My biggest regret is we were not able to get TPP approved.
Yeah.
And I really, to the minute it went down, was working on it.
Yeah.
And the business community was very much behind it. I really think by walking away from TPP, we gave up our leverage to get the world to do trade by rules that are based on, you know, on a rules-based order that benefits not just the United States, but frankly benefits all the countries and their peoples engaged in TPP. And you see now the TPP 11 proceeding, and I'm really promote that. I think it will be good for their countries, but also good for their peoples.
Yeah.
That's probably my biggest regret. The work that needs to go on, I think, around inclusive economic growth is significant. You know, the mistrust of trade is really grounded, I think, in the fact that we have such a diversion between the opportunity for those who have opportunity or wealth and those who don't in the United States. And we failed in helping workers feel confident that they have the background and the skills and the training they need to be able to adapt to a 21st century world that really has enormous automation, digitization, artificial intelligence, and globalization. So those are important things that have to happen. For the Secretary of Commerce particularly, the day-to-day work around the census, really, really important. What funding goes to what parts of the country depends very much on the census. The 2020 census is really important. The Weather Service, every day, the Department of Commerce provides weather information, all the fancy apps that we have, all the data out there, rides on the fact that the United States provides basic data information about weather that then gets presented by the private sector. Trade agreements, enforcing those trade agreements that we do have in place is really important work that goes on at the Department of Commerce every day. And then really embracing the fact we have a digital economy and what are the rules that ought to be in place around that digital economy, I think is really important work that continues, as well as making sure that our government data is, it's a public good, government data. It should be unleashed, particularly at a time when we're all using more data to define what we, what are the right decisions to be made. Government data should be made. I know in my businesses, I've used data that comes from the government since I started 30 plus years ago. And we need to do that, not just for businesses, but for individuals now have the power in our phones and in our computers to use that data.
Well, first, congratulations. That's quite, and you know, the agenda that you had as Commerce Secretary, incredibly important for the United States, for our business community, and your accomplishments are, of you and the department, are quite impressive. I couldn't agree with you more on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I think quite a disappointment to see us walk away from that. You know, we're here in China, and initially when the TPP was brought up by the United States, you heard a lot of voices of criticism from Chinese saying it was a tool of the United States to contain China. you know, over time, I heard more Chinese experts and officials talking about how good it would be for China to join the Trans-Pacific Partnership in terms of pushing their own economic reforms and having an outside goal to push them like they did with the WTO back in 2001. And so I think TPP-11, as you mentioned, is still here. And maybe at some point in time, the United States can look, but can get back to the TPP, because I think it's very important for our presence in the region.
I agree. I think as important as participating in the multilateral organizations like the World Bank or the IMF and others is to participate in multilateral trade agreements.
Yeah.
It helps set standards that are good for the American people,
right?
Not just American businesses. And that's something that, frankly, I don't think we were successful in explaining.
Yeah. One of the things we haven't talked about yet in terms of your role as Secretary of Commerce is your participation in the U.S.-China Joint Commission on Commerce and Trade, the JCCT, and the Strategic and Economic Dialogue. You and I have talked in the past about the need to get these kind of forum to move away from just an exchange of talking points, official talking points that the two sides bring together. You used innovative approaches in your interaction with the Chinese delegation, Vice Premier Wang Yang as your counterpart. Can you talk a little bit about the kind of things that worked? Right now we have the Comprehensive and Economic Dialogue, which is the Trump administration's approach to try to address these issues. What were some of the things from a standpoint of innovative approach that worked, that you saw working, and what can we learn from going forward?
I think that my observation when I came to my first JCCT was that we were really reading our talking points to each other. And probably that was okay for the first time because I had so much to learn. But I also realized I didn't think we were going to produce much out of that.
Right.
So I came back to the United States and first talked to, my partner in that effort, my co-chair, if you will, the U.S. trade rep, Mike Froman, then with the administration and said, let's reimagine the JCCT.
Mm-hmm.
And what did that mean?
Yeah.
And reimagine JCCT. And then, of course, I communicated with Wang Yang and said, let's try something new, mm-hmm. See if we can be more effective. And we did a number of things. First is we took a dozen issues that we thought we could make progress on, and we, six from the United States, six from China, that were outstanding irritants, and we tasked our teams to really fix those problems,
mm-hmm.
And do that them at that level. And then we took another dozen issues that were harder, and we said, we're going to work at our level with each other to try and resolve these issues. And that...
Among these, would they be sort of, market access issues, IPR,
yes.
Forced technology transfer, industrial policies that disadvantage
yes.
U.S.
And
companies?
Yes, and some of them would be very specific mm-hmm. around... we would go deep. We weren't going mm-hmm. to be... superficial. We were more interested in can we actually fix a problem, let's say whether it was regarding seeds and mm-hmm. how do we get access for our seeds into mm-hmm. China, or how are we going to get access for various pharmaceuticals.
Mm-hmm.
We were not going to live at a level where everybody had nice little report at the end, but it didn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Having said that, it was, then you had to make sure when we made the agreements, people yeah. lived up to their agreements. That
and
was
these
always
are the
yeah.
issues that will determine the future health of the U.S.-China trade and economic relationship. And if progress isn't made on these, which is why it's so important, I think, to make progress. Right?
I think it's extremely important to make progress, but it can't be superficial progress.
Right.
It also, I think it's important to talk about the tough stuff.
Right.
And so some of the things that we did in terms of talking about issues that were not ripe for being resolved was we would sit together, whether it was the issue of, let's say, excess capacity
mm-hmm.
or, frankly, the state-owned enterprises and letting companies live beyond, frankly, their economic viability.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of saying, you need to bankrupt companies, what
right.
we did was we would sit together and we would listen to experts from both countries on these very complex issues. Mm. And we would listen as government leaders mm-hmm. to experts from both countries so that we could understand the issue and the ramifications of the, of that mm-hmm. to each other.
Right.
As well as to the world. Mm. And then what we would do is take those learnings mm-hmm. and then set our teams to go to work. Mm-hmm. So there's an aspect of building trust mm-hmm. and there was an aspect of building understanding.
Together, learning.
Together and yeah. learning together. And I think that was effective.
Yeah.
And you saw, you know, a major agreement in 2015 regarding intellectual property. Right. And I think that came from mm-hmm. some of those kinds of conversations. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that got done at, you know, the president's mm-hmm. level. Mm-hmm. But we did a lot of work in those areas. And so I think the approach was valuable.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean we couldn't constantly be reevaluating sure. and learning how sure. to do better. But I felt, and you know, Vice Premier Wang Yang was open to that mm-hmm. idea, and it built, helped us build trust.
Yeah. You know, an effort to move away from talking points and find, you know, real constructive, concrete ideas to make progress, I think, is very, very healthy. And I think this is something right now, in terms of addressing these really important structural issues in the relationship, that we need to be thinking about.
It's hard, regardless of what country yeah. you know you're sitting across from,
right.
when there's 100 people behind you
yeah.
on both sides, you know, listening to your every word,
right.
you want to be well thought out.
Yeah.
And so finding a way to have a real conversation about the challenge mm-hmm. of resolving a problem,
mm-hmm.
assuming your counterpart wants to resolve it,
right,
is the trick, I think, for our engagements. Yeah. And looking for ways to do that where folks feel that there's a genuine interest in figuring out solutions.
And finally,
is key.
If I could ask, you know, you've talked a lot about the importance of a skilled workforce, and you've also talked about automation and technological advancements and artificial intelligence and how that will affect the kind of workforce that we need in the United States to tackle future jobs. And this will be a challenge going forward, is try to adjust, make those adjustments that are required. It seems to me that, you know, China is facing similar challenges. In your view, I mean, is this an area where we should be working together on?
I think this is the defining issue of our time, frankly, is how do we ensure that our peoples and have confidence that they are prepared for the work opportunities of the 21st century. And I think that issue exists both in the United States and in China and many other countries around right. the world. As we face a world where artificial intelligence, automation, autonomous vehicles are really part of our lives,
yeah.
and if they're not here and present today, are going to be only more so over the next 5 to 10 years. It's today. This
Absolutely.
Is not something mm-hmm. that is decades away. And you see the angst in the United States
mm-hmm.
Expressed by people's concern. But it's a similar issue for China. China
yeah.
is becoming a more mature country,
mm-hmm.
and its work, the work that occurs here, is more developed and more sophisticated. And therefore, the technologies that are being used will be sophisticated in both countries.
Yeah.
This is an area I think governments are not really prepared for.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's an area, an opportunity for learning. I think it's a place where Carnegie Tsinghua could mm-hmm. play a role. I think it's a place where dialogues ought to occur. I think there's an opportunity to really help governments,
mm-hmm.
the governments to turn to the private sector and say, hey, you can't just innovate our peoples out of
right.
The capacity to support their families.
Mm-hmm.
That's not going to work. So how do we do this? Where, because you're not going to put the innovation genie back in the bottle.
No. Mm.
And so this is an area I think of that is that we could work together on
yeah.
and learn from each other.
One of the defining issues of the 21st century, that's a powerful statement, and I agree, and I hope this is an area the U.S.-China can work on together. Secretary Pritzker, thank you very much for coming to visit the Carnegie Tsinghua Center in Beijing, and thank you for joining the China in the World podcast.
Well, Paul, thanks so much for having me. It's a real pleasure to be here.
That's it for this edition of the Carnegie Tsinghua China in the World podcast. I encourage you to explore our site and see the work of all our scholars at the Carnegie Tsinghua Center. Thank you for listening. Be sure to tune in next time.